What's up, guys? Before we begin this podcast, I want to let you know that we got JT on the ads right now.
What up? I'm going to start doing ads now.
Guys, we're going on tour this week. Tonight, actually, we're going to be in Sacramento. San Francisco tickets are going fast. They might be sold out. So get your tickets now at chatandjt.com. We're also in Portland on Friday, two shows. And then we got Austin, Texas coming up on April 15th. That's going to be a sick show, Moon Tower Festival. And then what do we have after that? We have Arlington, back to Washington, D.C.
That was fun. I'm excited to get one of those Italian subs that they got out there.
Dude, yeah, chatandjt.com for tickets. All right. We're also brought to you by the legends at Kiva Confections. Guys, if you want cannabis edibles, you like edibles, right?
Uh-huh.
The Kiva Confections, the best edibles you've ever had.
Yeah.
And they're just like, they can customize them for you. Super potent, plant-based. No excuse not to try them, right?
Bro, go on a ride.
Yeah. Californians, you can get 30% off your first order delivered straight to your door. Go to KivaConfections.com/go deep and use code go deep. All right, let's start the show. What's with deep? Go with deep. Chad and
JT. I could do one.
You want to try one?
Yeah, can
dude,
I try one?
Dude, fire. You do the intro. Fire all right. Off. This is huge. This is his first time doing the... Oh.
Put Gizmo on my gonads and call it a bonanza. What's up, Stokers of Stoke Nation? This is JT Parr coming at you hot. I got my compadre with me, Chad Kroger.
What up?
And we are joined today...
Oh, wait, sorry.
Yeah.
Boom clap.
No, I like that you did your own spin, dude. Yeah, dude. That was sick, bro. That's your new tagline, is yeah. What up? Oh, yeah. I guess that's always been kind of your tagline.
Yeah, what up?
Do you want to intro the guest? So guys, we are so fortunate today, so stoked. We have our guest with us today, skateboarding phenomenon, Paul Rodriguez.
What up?
Dude, what up?
Good, man.
What's up, guys? I'm stoked to be here. Thanks for having me.
Stoked to have you.
Oh, my pleasure. Big fan. Big fan.
Oh, same here.
Yeah. Appreciate that, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was looking through, I was listening to some interviews back, and I've been watching you skate, but you became pro around like 2000, right?
Yeah, 2002 when I turned
2002?
Pro.
Yeah,
but yeah, I was on the scene in like 2000.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been
long ass time.
We've been watching. Yeah, I've been watching you since I was a kid.
Damn.
That's crazy. Yeah.
What does it mean to like be on the scene?
Be on the skate scene?
Like you're like in videos now, or you're sponsored?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, to be on the scene would be. When I was coming, it was before internet, you know, so it was like to be in a video that a company would put out, and it would be in the skate shops or be in an actual magazine other than like your local skate shop. Nowadays, to be on the scene might be like if you get a video maybe on Thrasher.
Right.
If you just get a pretty big following on social media and... you know, people start reposting and stuff like that. It's kind of more blurry these days, the lines of like who's on the scene, who's not on the scene.
Right.
Because like it seems like some people are further on the scene than they actually are, but they're still, you know, trying to get sponsors and like make a career out of it. Like some people have momentum and attention, but haven't figured out how to like make a career out of it yet.
Yeah, it's true of what we do too. It's like you can get a lot of eyeballs, but... like it's crazy to me. Like I was looking at TikTok. You get paid $15 for 500,000 views on TikTok.
Oh my god!
Like if your video gets, and I'm like, in what other time in human history can 500,000 people watch your thing, like it, and you get $15?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the equivalent of just not getting the $15. I mean,
yeah, it makes no difference.
Like, yeah, it's like
it makes you feel bad about the views when really you should be stoked.
Yeah, yeah, you're overwhelmed. You're like, oh well, this is never gonna go anywhere. Like, you know, it's good for the views, but like, I don't know. It's not very rewarding, at least financially yet. But if you got the bigger picture, you'll get somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
get somewhere.
It seems like. You got to be a little more kind of entrepreneurial and like self-generated these days. Like I remember with surfing, because I love to surf. So like I remember there was the surf videos, and then it's like a bunch of surfers had their own websites, like the blogs on the web. And now it's like clips on the. It seems like the videos are. It's all just kind of clips on social media now. It's kind of what generates fandom.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like just got to learn how to work. work in that flow, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I came from a generation that was before.
Yeah.
And so I had to, like, learn how to adjust into what it is now, which was, like, a huge learning curve. But luckily, I stuck with it, and it's working. It worked in my benefit because at least going into this social media age, I already, like, in skateboarding had, like, a name or whatnot. So going into the social media, I didn't have to, like, start from zero.
Yeah.
Like, nobody knowing me at all. So I kind of had a little bit of a foundation going into it that kind of helped me. But it took me a while to actually catch on what social media was and what it meant.
Totally.
Yeah. Who was your, like, or how did you first get into a video? Like, how'd you get discovered?
In a skate video? Back then, we would just send physical VHS copies into companies.
Really?
And a friend of mine was sponsored by this company called Status Skateboards, and they were based out of Carlsbad. And he was driving down to Carlsbad one weekend to go, you know, pick up some product and just skate down there for the weekend. So I was like, hey man, like, mind taking my video with you and showing them? So he took it down, he showed the guys over there, and they had another company called DNA Skateboards. And he called me when he was down there. He's like, I gave it to him, man. They're really hyped on the video. Like, they want you to, you know, they want to meet you and hook mm-hmm. you up with some stuff. And I just went crazy. I was like, all right, great. So the next weekend, him and I drove back down there. They gave me all kind of free boards. They told me they want to put me on the team and give me an ad in a magazine. And I was
really?
Like, yeah, that was wow. my dream come true. Just like that.
Call.
Like, yeah, it was crazy.
Does that guy wear glasses now?
No, not that I know of.
For sure.
Not that I know of. Neither of us do, thankfully.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. We're still holding
got
it down.
Vision.
Yeah, you know. Big
and then
vision.
So when the video came out and you saw it in like the skate shops, were you just going like
oh yeah, that was like
were you showing it to people?
Yeah, yeah. Like all ladies? My friends, my mom. Nah, dude, I was too locked in. I didn't care about ladies
dude,
till
that's
much
awesome.
Later.
Let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah. Yeah, I was way too like
you're just
I don't
about
got
to
time
ride.
For nothing. I'm just about this. So yeah, I don't know, I was showing all my family, all my friends and stuff like that, but yeah, just seeing the video and the skate, it was like probably the equivalent of like, I don't know, somebody like starring in Marvel Iron Man movie or mm-hmm. something like that. To me, that was like just as big in my mind, in my mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all relative.
Was that the moment where you kind of realized you could turn it into a career, or were you just riding the wave? And was there a definitive moment where you're like, I think mm-hmm. I could go pro full time?
Naively, you know, when that had happened, this story I was telling you, I was only 14, so like right. I didn't even understand what a career was. I didn't yeah. know the difference between a job and a career. I just knew that I loved it and I wanted to be in the videos and respected by all the guys I looked up to. But when I, from the beginning, I knew, like, once I found it was somebody's job that they could skate, I was like, no, I gotta do this has to be my job.
Yeah.
So I just went after it. But when it actually was starting to become a reality, I would say I was about 15, 16 years old. I got on some bigger sponsors, started paying me a little bit, and I thought it was like so much money. And just getting more ads in more magazines and getting more momentum. More people asked me to be in other big videos, and I just kind of kept going with it. And
did you finish high school?
No, I'm a dropout.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Were your parents like fully supportive because they could see the checks coming in, right?
Yes and no. They were supportive, but they were definitely like skeptical.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They were like, but see, by the time I dropped out, I dropped out when I was 17, and I was only in the 10th grade when I was 17 because I finally convinced my mom when I was going from 9th grade into 10th that summer. I begged her all summer long, please let me go home school, please let me go home school, please, please, please. I finally wore her down and annoyed her so much to finally, all right, yes, you can have home school. Thank you, Mom, I promise you won't regret this. I'm gonna skate so many more hours a day. I'm gonna get better faster, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And I wasn't lying. I was like dead serious on that. So I went when I was just before I turned 16, I got to homeschool. But as soon as I got into home studies, I basically did nothing. So by the time I was 17, I was still in the same grade.
Yeah.
And I was just skating all day. But then I turned pro at 17. I was like taking care of my mom, taking care of the bills. So I was like, wow. Sorry, Mom, I'm done with school. And like, there was really no like, she could say, no, I don't want you to do that. But there was really no repercussion if I listened or not, you know? So I said, yeah. Mom, Dad, I'm gonna go with this and just be done with school altogether.
What did your? Because your dad's a comedian, so mm-hmm. what did he think? Was he just
Wait, your dad, is your dad Paul Rodriguez the comedian?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, my dad.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Pops.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, man.
Holy shit.
There you go. Got here quicker than it said.
Yeah. Oh, they beat the time by 9 minutes. Right. Hey, Palm Coffee. I was telling these guys I was going to dip out to grab my coffee, and they beat the estimate by...
About 9 minutes.
9 minutes. Dude, it's a great place. Yeah. Dude, your dad's Paul Rodriguez,
yeah,
the comedian?
Yeah, my pops.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, so he gets it then. He's lived the itinerant lifestyle. He knows what it means to be on the road.
Well, yes and no. I mean, he, you know, he was, and to his credit, like, he was just doing his fatherly duty because he didn't know nothing about skateboarding, the fact that you can make a job out of it. He even did a routine about it, a stand-up routine about it. But long story short, when I told him, Dad, you know, I want to be a pro skater and I want to drop out of school and pursue this, he was like, son, you know, I don't know if this is something you can do as a career. I don't know if, you know, it wasn't that he was against it. He just wasn't sure about any
right.
And how many famous skateboarders figure are there? How many people do you know that are making a living doing it?
Right.
Yeah.
So any parental figure will be like a little concerned. But then I just said, Dad, like, well, you know, what did you tell your parents? Like, his parents are literally straight from Mexico. He was born in Mexico, came here as a baby, grew up in Compton, and they were dirt poor. And his dream was to tell jokes. They had no idea what comedians were, you know what I mean? Like, coming from where they came from. So, like, I'm sure they were even more puzzled by his dream than my dream. So once I kind of put that into perspective for him, he was like, you got me. There's not really much I could say. I guess, you know, I'd be a hypocrite if I...
Yeah,
would tell you not to do this. So,
he wasn't like, son, do you don't want to try stand up?
Nah, dude, that's just not where my gift is. Like, here and there, I could say something clever once in a while, but like that, he's really sharp like that all the time. Like, my gifts are more physical.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not comical. I wish, but
yeah. What are the key like athletic attributes for a skateboarder? Like, what are the things that you like? You got to have like. What do they call it? Like proprioception? Like, you got to know how to flip and like how to feel your body in the air.
That spatial awareness definitely helps. Explosiveness will help if, you know, the higher you can jump, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe certain acrobatic skills, being able to tumble and roll and learn how to fall, because that's pretty much what you do the most of is falling. Mm-hmm. So if you can fall more times without actually getting hurt, then you can get up more times and try again. So. Yeah. That's super helpful. And I guess just like eye-foot coordination, or, you know, coordination, I guess, in general, balance.
I had a buddy named Ricky, who was really good at skating, but he didn't know how to fall. He'd go like rigor mortis stiff every time.
Mm-hmm.
And he broke a bone every month.
Jeez.
Of senior year.
And he's got such a good name for it.
So he graduated. We pushed him on one of his skateboards up to the diploma.
Yeah.
Oh,
he
man.
He was in a full body cast.
Yeah. Like what, on Something About Mary, like the dog?
Yeah. The car. Yeah.
I definitely know friends like that growing up who were like, had more balls than skills. And I respect the hell out of them, but like,
they would put it all on the line.
Yeah, they aged themselves pretty quickly just with how much they would get beat down. And there's even guys who made it to pro status who are like that. But, you know, after you hit a certain age or you break enough parts of your body, I'm sure it's got to be taxing on, like, again, another one, like, getting back up, recovering from that, getting back up. It's probably draining.
Have you had many injuries?
I've been really fortunate. I mean, I've had a lot of sprained ankles. I did 5 years ago blow out my right knee, had full like ACL. Yeah, full ACL meniscus surgery. That took me out for almost 2 years till I was like 100%.
Was that brutal to be like laid up like that for a while?
Yeah, mentally. It was mentally brutal, but I think it was actually, in hindsight, not that I'd want to go through it again, God forbid, but in hindsight, I think it was actually a real big blessing. And I got lucky that it didn't happen to me until I was already in my 30s. So I had this whole long career and I was grateful and was able to accomplish all the things I wanted to. So when it finally happened to me, it really messed with my head at first. But once I like had all that time to sit and think and realize everything that I've been able to do in skateboarding, I felt a lot of gratitude. I was just so grateful that this was my career. Mm-hmm. And even the injury at the point that it happened, I was so grateful it happened then rather than like in the middle of my prime.
Right.
You know? And then I realized how much I had kind of gotten to a point where I was almost taking things for granted without even realizing it. I wasn't challenging myself as much. I wasn't pushing myself as much. I wasn't like as dedicated as I once was. So it gave me time to reflect and like reevaluate what I want from skateboarding and do I want to move forward and what my goals are. So, you know, it had its value.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was like, it like kind of forced a press pause on you. Like that's how COVID was for me. Because I was like working so hard before COVID, and then when COVID happened and I just had to sit there and I couldn't be like competitive about career or like worried about the next thing. I just sat there and I was like, oh, I'm actually pretty stoked on all this stuff I've been doing. But had there not been that moment, I would have just kept like kind of
churning. You're just running and you're not like really taking a step back and observing, which there's a time for both. So I guess that was just my turn to be forced to sit down. And that's the first time. And, you know, at that time I had been skating 21 years, and that's my first time in 21 years that I had not skated for anywhere longer than maybe 3 weeks, maybe a month if I had a bad sprained ankle, but I'd never, ever gone longer than a month my whole life without skating.
And how long exactly, throughout the 2 years, did you not skate that whole time, or when did you start skating again?
I got okayed by the doctor after, I think it was 15 months after surgery. Sorry, after the actual injury, but I had to wait 4 months to get surgery.
Right.
So then from the surgery date, it was like a full year. So it was somewhere around 15 months altogether to where he finally said, all right, I'm going to okay you to go skate, push around, don't push it. And so naturally I pushed it to a certain amount, but then I kind of had a little bit of a scare. So like, made me stop.
Yeah.
And then it probably took almost another full year till I was fully confident and I like where I could skate without being mentally like distracted by it, thinking like, oh my god, can I do this yet? To where I was finally like didn't think about it anymore and just skated normal.
So. What's your daily schedule like? Do you set aside like I'm gonna skate for like 4 hours or anything like that, or do you just kind of whatever comes your way?
Yeah, it's kind of a feeling type thing. I mean, I have days where I generally will be like, all right, usually Monday, Wednesday, Friday are like days that are pretty much flexible and open, but those are the days I really skate a lot. Tuesday, Thursdays I work out with my trainer. So sometimes, depending on the workout, if I'm feeling pretty worn out, I won't maybe skate on those days. Sometimes I will. And then weekends I kind of reserve for street skating to go out and film and stuff.
Is that what you're primarily known for, is your street skating?
Yeah, street skating, filming video parts and stuff like that is really what built my career. I've done fairly well contest skating, but I think street skating is definitely the thing that's really been my foundation.
Are you good at like analyzing the street? Like when you look at it, can you like visualize what the ride will be?
Yeah. Probably most skaters I would assume are like that.
When you see a fire hydrant, what does that suggest?
It makes me have to pee. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. It just depends, man. If it has a nice curb cut next to it, then all right, that's cool.
Yes.
It might be a little something. But yeah, I'll be driving and I'll be looking like, oh shit, you see that rail? Oh shit, there's look at that ledge. Or, you know, I'll see everything differently. You know, a skater will see stuff like just driving by the street like, oh, stop, pull over. I got to check that out. So that's pretty cool seeing like the whole, I guess, every city as like a skate park, potential skate park, you know? So...
How do you get inspired for new tricks? Like, are you skating and then you have like an idea of something you want to do, or is there something that you've seen that you want to maybe do but build on, or
a little bit of all that?
Yeah.
Sometimes I have a warehouse where I built my own little private skate park, and I'll just be skating in there working on some normal things and maybe try a trick that I normally do, but it'll accidentally do something different. And it'll give me an idea like that. Or I'll watch a video and be inspired by someone else and be like, hey, I want to learn that trick too.
Yeah.
Or I'll be laying in bed or something and a trick will pop in my mind and I'll just have it and remember to try it the next day. It's like all just varies. And sometimes I'll go, I'll go to different street spots that I've never been to, new spots, and I'll have an idea for that depending if how the obstacle is, and the obstacle can really dictate sometimes the tricks you might do, because you might go to a spot that you've never been to and there's not really a spot that you can mimic that like in a skate park, and it might just be something unique to that spot and you kind of make something off the fly at that spot. So it's all different.
Is the main evaluation when you're doing like out in the world stuff just like the landing, like figuring out how you're gonna
No, I would say the takeoff too. The takeoff, because it depends what kind of wheels you ride and how rough the concrete is or whatever the surface is. Could be marble and that's the best ever and you're just in heaven.
Marble's the best to take off of?
Take off, land, grind, slide. It's like the smoothest, best material.
We should petition the city council to make the whole city marble.
LA?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The marble jungle.
Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, this is
why. Yeah, the marble jungle. And then just skaters will descend on this.
Yes, yes. I love this. Well, this is how I became a big fan of you guys in the first place for all the work you did for us boarders. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You got to protect them, man.
You got to protect all the boarders, man. Yeah. And
marble's beautiful. So it's like, you just can't put like lime juice on it? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Lime juice.
Dude, yeah.
My girl just redid her kitchen. I think if you get lime juice on marble, it fucks it up.
Do you spill some lime juice?
Oh, really?
No, because we ended up going with another surface because I knew I would.
Right.
She's like, you won't spill lime juice on this thing. I was like, I will now.
He's a big lime juice guy.
Oh, who doesn't love lime?
I put it in my hair so I can get that cool 90s get that frosted sun look, dude.
Yeah, what was that stuff called that you used to buy the spray?
Hydrogen peroxide?
No,
sun in.
There you go. Yeah.
Dude.
Acid.
Natural sun in.
Yeah. Dude, so marble's the best. What's the worst thing to take off of?
Just crusty ass old weathered concrete.
Because it's got like, it's uneven and got like weird gradients to it.
Or if you fall, it's like a cheese grater and it'll just shred you up.
Dude.
It's just usually it's more old weathered surfaces. Bricks I'm not a fan of.
Right, yeah, bumpy.
Yeah, brick surfaces and stuff like
that.
Do you
bomb hills?
Not really.
No.
Since I grew up around here, like, it wasn't really a thing.
That's
not
like
really.
SF is known for that.
Yeah. SF is super known for that. They got these dudes called GX1000. These guys just do these death-defying hill bombs all day.
It's real dangerous,
it's
right?
Super dangerous. Unfortunately, one guy of their crew passed away doing it.
That's like the free soloing of skateboarding, right?
Where it's
like,
I would say so.
It's like one mistake and
that and just skating. Like the rails that these guys are skating these days are just, I don't get it. Like, I don't know how they can push themselves to this level of overcoming that fear. Like, I'm not a dangerous skater.
Well, like some of the big drops, like I'll see them, you know, it'll be like 15, it looks like 15, 20 feet. I don't know how you're, is it just absorbing it with your knee? Like how do you land on a flat surface and not
splat,
break your legs?
I guess you build your strength gradually, you know, from I was doing it since I was a young kid, and you start off in like a two stair or three stair and you build up, and I guess naturally just during that process your legs grow stronger, your body's stronger. Yeah, and but now, I mean, just the stuff people are doing to me is unreal.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to these handrails. The guys are skating. It blows my mind. I can't even relate to it. Yeah, the length, but it's not even that anymore. It's like they'll do ones that are just kink rails down a whole bunch of sets, or it'll curve crazy, and you're just like how do you not get smoked? Like a lot of times, like I'm more interested in seeing the attempts before the make. Like, what did they do? How did they avoid?
Right.
How did they avoid? You know,
what did they figure out
getting hurt so that they can keep going? And sometimes they don't, you know, but I'll watch it and I can't even relate to it. I'm just like, this is a total different world than what I.
Who are your favorite? Your hero is Eric Costin, right?
Yeah, Costin's.
And then, so what are your favorite types of skaters to watch? Like technical or like big, I guess like the Danny Ways of like the big air kind of stuff?
I would say it doesn't really matter what type of skating is done. It's more about how it's done.
Yeah.
Like if a person is really fluid or really kind of just make it look really graceful and it looks like they're really in control of the board, I'm more drawn to that type of skater. Sometimes there's guys who are really, really good, but it looks like it was just so difficult for them, and right. it looks like that it was almost luck is usually what is not something I'm more drawn to.
And you're just kind of born with that. That's a style that's like innate to your body.
To a degree. I mean, maybe like some guys, like for me when I was coming up, I had the good fortune of having some older guys that mentored me, and they would drill it into my head like, nah, man, you gotta work on your style. Like, it's good to learn new tricks all the time, but you gotta work on your style, work on being smooth, work on, you know, being graceful, and really that just comes down to like being more focused on mastering a trick and getting really consistent at it before you move on, you know? That's mm-hmm. kind of was always my
right,
process.
Don't just do the trick and then be on
yeah,
to the next.
Yeah, and some
one.
Guys will like do it, get a trick once or twice, okay, onto the next part of it, onto the harder version, and they'll do it and they'll progress, but like, in my opinion, a lot of times it won't be as masterful, I guess.
Yeah, it's
graceful.
Not beautiful.
Yeah.
That's in Dogtown too. In the documentary, they talk about guys who have like cockroach style. And it's like, you always wanted to like, yeah, like look like a cool guy while you're doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
like, yeah. I want to hang out with that guy.
Yeah, when exactly. You watch him. Exactly. And I have this theory, like, where I feel like you can kind of tell somebody's personality by how they skate.
Right.
You could tell when somebody's like more of a like a spracked out kind of guy, or like a tense kind of wound up guy. You can tell when a guy like, what's up, dude? How you doing? Like, just by the way they skate. Like,
that's
you can
how we
should
audition people for friend yeah. groups. I'm like, dude, can you bust a kickflip real
yeah,
quick?
Yeah, you
can
tell the schmoll skaters are.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? I'm like, dude, I'm feeling a lot of tension in your shoulders. That's how I work with those, dude. It sounds like you're gonna overplan things and make yeah. sure you're all on time yeah. too much.
They say that about surfers too, like Rob Machado.
Mm-hmm.
He's just relaxed. Mm-hmm. I find a lot too, you know. It's in like sort of the your arms.
Yeah.
If you have like a limp wrist, like cool wrist movements, you know, if you land a trick and you just fucking go like that.
You're flowing, you're smooth.
You're flowing, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep that chill.
Yeah, what? That's just a theory I have though, but I think.
I buy it.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask if you have an example of that.
I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
So it's mostly negative. It's mostly
no.
Negative.
Okay. Yeah, I'll say my yeah, favorite guy coming up style wise was Tom Penny. Mm-hmm. Tom Penny was a guy real big in the mid '90s, early 2000s. Then he kind of disappeared, and he had this whole mystical kind of legend thing about him, where like he came onto the scene, he blew everyone's mind by doing these incredible flip tricks and looking like he was asleep. The dude was like literally in a coma while he's skating, just
that's so sick,
just like it was nothing. And then he disappeared, and this was before social media, so it was like everybody had these theories like, where'd he go, what's he doing? He kind of got off the scene, and then he made a comeback, and he appeared out of nowhere. And it was like, to me, that whole vibe was so like, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. But just the way he dressed too, his clothes, they were a little bit baggier, they would always match. And it's like the guy never like seemed like he talked. He's like this dude from England with a real deep voice. Hey, what's up, mate? And like, you just, everything about him was just like yeah. so just legendary. And it was just like, he didn't look like he talked much. Just stare around and stand up, go do an incredible trick, and then kind of sit down, chill. And you're like, this is just so incredible.
Where did he disappear to? Did anyone ever figure it out?
From what I heard, he was just in France chilling. His mom had this property, and there was like a barn or a back house or something, and he built a like a little mini ramp in there, and he was just that's skating cool. it all the time, just kind of chilling. And then when he decided to pop back up on the scene, he kind of did. And even now to this day, he's around, and it's like when you see him, like I saw him this summer when I was in Copenhagen, and I saw him riding a bike, because in that city you ride bikes everywhere. And I called my name, and I heard the voice. I was like, I know that voice. I looked over, and he was like, "Boo, what's up?" I'm like, "Oh!" I immediately turned into like a 14-year-old kid. Like, "Tom, what's up, dude?" I went over yeah. there. "Hey, man, how you going?" Like, trying to keep my cool, but like, yeah. I just turned into a kid, and he's just so like, "Hey, good to see you." But like, when you're at a skate event and he's there, it's like he's literally like the king holding court. Everybody's around him. If he needs something, you know, like if he wants a joint, like, he'll just do this. Somebody hand him a joint, fucking whatever. Drink. Someone hand him a drink. He's just like a king. Like they just
right.
wherever he goes, whatever he does, like he has people who are just like, not even that he even brought the people. That's just it. It just naturally happens. So he's so like mystical and mythical to me.
Yeah, don't be too available. Just show up once in a while and everyone goes bananas when you're there. And then it's kind of pure because it's like he doesn't need the adulation or the scene.
And I feel he's almost oblivious to how legendary he is, which makes it cool.
No way, dude. I bet you he knows.
Maybe. If he does,
I'm cynical
about
that stuff.
If he does, he's playing it off real good, but it's almost like he just doesn't know or care or whatever, and it makes it that much
cooler. It works.
Yeah.
What's going through... I had two questions.
Yes.
What's going through your head when you're doing like a rail or something like that? Like, are you self-talking? Are you like, all right, lean to the left? Or are you like...
No. I am... I'm pretty much just... Nothing's going through my head. I'm feeling what's going to happen. Like, I'm feeling the movement in my body and trying to like... It's hard to explain, actually. It's and trying to like...
Yeah, that's what I'm curious
about. Make my body do what I feel it, what I feel like it should do.
But it's not like active voice thoughts. It's more just like intuition and feeling.
No, sometimes it'll be active voice thoughts just before I start the roll up. You know, I'll tell myself, like, give myself a little something. Like, if it's a rail trick, I'll just be like, all right, just focus on getting your truck on. You know, I'm going to do a front feeble, okay, just focus on getting that back truck. Focus on getting the back truck. And then I'll go. And then it's like you go blank. Sometimes during the middle of a trick, I've actually done the trick, landed, and then like almost like I've come, like I came to, like I don't remember the in-between part of doing the trick. You just kind of ride away and you're like, wow, like I really don't even remember the middle half of that while I was actually in the midst of it.
Oh, that's going to be a phenomenal feeling.
It's pretty crazy.
To like
it's
snap out of
feeling.
Like vigilance and consciousness a little bit.
Yeah, you're like
totally
so
activated.
Locked in. That's like you can't, your brain forgot to even record it as a memory or something. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And then you land and you just flow.
Yeah, flow. You're in flow state, dude.
It happens. Yeah, it happens. I wish I can do that on purpose, but.
Like when you're just chilling, like just like right now.
Well, I'd like to remember my life, but. You know.
right. Yeah.
So maybe
not
to that extreme, but yeah, it'd be nice to be in a flow state nonstop.
Do you do work to like try and. Be more relaxed or like prepare for those moments so you're more creative and loose?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely meditate regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Meditate, pray regularly, usually in the morning and then in the evening before I go to bed. Sorry.
Looks like you got a boner.
Oh, yeah, nah, it's just my baggy pants.
It'd be good if you did have a boner.
I was just that hyped to see you guys.
Yeah, no judgment if you did have wood, dude.
No, man. At my age, I'm glad I can even get one. No, I'm just kidding.
For real. You know, the key for me on getting hard, it's just perverted thoughts. As long as the brain is active, my body can respond.
That's right. That's
what were
right.
we talking about?
Well, being loose, which I think
dude, yeah, I was loose right there when I said that. Yeah.
So you were in flow state.
Dude,
you
I was in flow. I forgot what I said.
That was the first episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm right there.
What happened there?
Larry literally did a whole. The beginning of the episode was Larry with his pants like this, sitting on the couch next to his wife, and like his pants look like I got a boner. And then for some reason, his wife was busy one day, and Larry wanted to go see a movie, so she's like, "Go with my friend so and so. She wants to see that movie. Why don't you guys go together?"
Yeah,
it's like, all right. So they go to the movie together, and Larry's wife's friend looks over at Larry, sees his pants, thinks
now.
He got a boner.
Yeah.
He's like, no. Like, it was great. So.
Are you a big comedy fan?
Huge comedy fan. I mean, grew up in it, you know?
Right. So would your dad take you to the clubs and stuff?
Not necessarily the clubs, but like, you know, when I was younger, when I was a kid, it was when it was like at his height, and he would do big, huge theaters and arenas and stuff. So he would take me to those ones. But I didn't understand the jokes back then.
Sure.
They were too intricate for me. But
do you watch back now?
Oh yeah, I watched back his con. I went and saw him a few weeks ago over at the Laugh Factory.
Cool.
He was hilarious. I was like, oh my god, like the guy still got it. It was really cool watching.
I saw him at the Ha Ha.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. It was just like some random night. I think he just like popped in.
Yeah, he'll
and
do
he
that.
He was just hanging on stage. Yeah. Just hanging with the crowd. It was cool to watch.
That's pretty dope, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure as you guys know, like comedy clubs like that are like what a skate park is for me. I go there to work out some tricks and take them to the streets, you know?
Yeah.
I was wondering, because, you know, like, athletes' kids are generally pretty good athletes, and I think part of it is that they've been in locker rooms their whole life, and they've seen what it looks like to perform in front of those crowds. Did seeing your dad do, like, theater shows and watching him perform while being spectated, did that assist you at all in, like, not getting nervous when you're skating at competitions, or for understanding like the performance aspect of it?
A little bit, but what it really did for me was more so when I was born all the way until, you know, I got into my skate career, I seen this person who was living their dream and following their dream. So to me, when I from birth, it was like almost subconscious programming of like, I thought that's what was normal. Like,
Everyone does that. You pursue your dream, you follow your
dream, and you succeed at it, and that's what you do for your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's what it did for me, is like, oh yeah. So every time I had a hobby as a kid, whatever the when I was in karate class, and oh, I'm gonna be like Van Damme and Bruce Lee, I'm gonna do the dopest karate movies ever.
Yeah.
And then I would play baseball, and I was gonna I love Nolan Ryan as a pitcher. Oh, I'm gonna be the best pitcher ever. So every hobby I did it as if like it was real, like important. Mm-hmm. So finally, when skateboarding came along, it was the same thing. Like, oh, let me find out. Oh, Eric Cosson, Tom Penny, Andrew Reynolds. Oh, I'm gonna be just like them, best dude ever. Yeah. And just work towards it. And then luckily for me, nothing else took my attention away from skateboarding.
Yeah.
So I think watching my dad from birth all the way up to my skateboarding career, it was really helpful in just already having such an optimistic mind of like, find something you love, and that's what you're gonna do with your life.
Right.
I think that's really essential when you pursue things like this.
Yeah.
Because you need that. Like, when I got into comedy and stuff, you just need this like naivete where like,
yeah,
like why not me? And you just dive into
it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's. Well, there's something else I was gonna say. Damn. Do you hang out with comics as a kid, like other comics?
I have, and more so now I get more into it. And I was just gonna say, dude, I actually think comedy is way scarier than skateboarding.
Oh, you do?
No,
dude, I've skated before.
It's tough, it's way scarier.
Depends on like, how your body works.
I've seen a lot of comics. You know, I've had the fortune of seeing them up close and stuff. But like, even just seeing my dad, like the emotional roller coaster he'll go on, like if he feels like he bombed and he comes off stage, he's gutted, he's so bummed. But then when he feels like he killed it, it's like the biggest high in the world.
Yeah.
And it's like no one can take you off that high. And like just going up on stage with something you have in your mind that you think is funny, but you're not really sure yet if anyone else will think it's funny, like to me that's really terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't actually have a problem with public speaking or going on stage and saying something, like if we were doing this interview on a stage and answering and responding to questions. But to go up with the responsibility of like, all right, I put this stuff in my mind, hopefully I remembered it right, I have all the material worked out, let me just go roll the dice and see what happens, like that seems terrifying to me.
Yeah. Do you there's something about, well, like when you're doing stand-up, like before you go on stage, I'll like think about it. I'm like, I'm just going up to talk to them. Like, it's insane. There's just a microphone, or like, yeah, this is insane. I was like, when are you effective when you're, let's say you're doing a run at the X Games, were you able to transition into like contest mode easily?
Yeah, for sure. I was definitely nervous all the time.
Yeah.
There's no really way of getting around the nerves. I guess I learned how to like work with the nerves or be friends with the nerves, kind of. But that took a little while of, I would actually just watch interviews of other athletes, like a lot of Kobe interviews, a lot of like Muhammad Ali when he was talking back in the day. And I would try to like, just like tap into the frequency that they were on, like, yeah, try to like get in that mindset that they were in, and just try to teach myself how to like what mental toughness was or whatever, and try to do that. Because, in the early parts, it would be like I'd be in practice, I would land everything every single try, but as soon as your name gets called, you literally freeze up, you literally, your body just will not function, your brain and body fall out of sync and they will not listen to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if that happens when you're skateboarding,
yeah, it sucks.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. It's dangerous, and it just, you just feel like, what the hell, just like you literally, it's like you short circuit and your body just stops listening to what you want it to do. So I really, that's when I started like experimenting with like meditation and like breathing techniques, and like just also putting yourself in that situation over and over again to try and work through it. So that was really the hardest part of contest skating, is really like your biggest problem. If you can get out of your own way, then you'll probably end up doing pretty decent.
Was there, when you started to become famous for skating, then you'd go to like skate parks and you'd see people and they'd notice you. Was it tough to overcome like their expectations? Like, did you get in your head about like, oh, they expect me to like perform at this level?
I've had moments like that. I have had moments like that. And thank God early on in my career, you know, especially when I was like really in my prime, I felt so confident in my skating and in how much I skated, how much I practiced, that it wasn't too big of a problem. I would feel it. I would sense it sometimes. And I've found a way to kind of like let it go and just release it,
mm-hmm.
and allow myself just to skate how I would normally skate.
Would like one-eyed dudes like challenge you to a skate off?
Yeah, all the time. Every time you go to a demo in a different city, there's always the local kid who's like, let me play a game of skate. Want to play a game of skate?
Mm-hmm.
And my philosophy was always, yes, I want to play a game of skate.
Oh, you took it on?
Always. Because I just told myself, even if I was nervous, even if I was like, damn, I don't want to get beat by the hometown hero in front of all the kids, you know, I told myself like, well, this is all training for contest. This is all training to get better. And
you don't want to be owned by fear where you're like backing down from challenges. That's not healthy.
And so if you do get beat by this guy, okay, figure out what tricks you got beat on. And now you got some homework to do, and now you'll learn new tricks and get a better repertoire or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing a nice thing for that guy.
Rarely happened, though.
Did you ever, because if you do lose,
then he's like, he gets to be around and be the guy the like best, everyone knows.
It's the
yeah.
best thing. He'll hold on to that forever.
Yeah.
It'll be like 20 years and he'll be like, dude, I beat him one time.
Yeah, there's only a few of those guys out there, so hopefully they're still holding on to that.
So your record's like, you're like 203 in
my
those
record's
instances?
Pretty damn good, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, awesome. Pretty damn good when
that's
it comes
like gunslinging,
to game
dude. That's like coming into a town in the Old West and you're like, bro, I'm faster than you.
Yeah,
I'll pull
the fastest
this trigger
gun,
quicker.
For sure.
That's cool.
So I've been fortunate. I don't know. I just always looked at it as like, you just got to keep putting yourself in the fire. Keep putting yourself in the fire. Keep
being comfortable there.
Yeah, and just...
There's a boxing trainer, Teddy Atlas. He has this great corner talk with Tim Bradley. It always makes the rounds on social media. Where he's like, we are firemen. We are in the fire. The fire lets us know we are home. We control the fire. And I watch and I'm like, I don't know what I apply it to. I apply it to like... Because what I struggle with is like doing stuff around the house. So I'll watch that before I like clean dishes. And I'm like,
you won't apply it to comedy and anything you're doing?
No, comedy's easier. I'm like,
oh, man.
I apply it to like doing stuff I don't want to do. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I see that.
So I'm just jacked up doing dishes. I'm in the fire.
I'm just raw, dude.
I'm bursting. Hey, man, wherever you can find how to apply it.
That's when I need the inspo.
I love it.
What do you prefer, skate or Tony Hawk's Pro Skater?
Whoa.
Or do you play them?
I don't play them.
Yeah.
I will admit I'm not much of a gamer at all. I had the good fortune of being in both of them. I was in the first game, or the first skate, and I was in Tony Hawk's Underground, Mike, was it?
Yep.
Tony Hawk's Underground.
Dude, you're a good bro for knowing that.
Yeah, Mike's he's
Let's
a
go,
skate
Mike.
Historian over here.
Oh, nice.
Tony Hawk Underground was sick.
Yeah, it was pretty dope. Thug. That's what I remember. But I've never been a gamer.
Yeah.
Not since like way back when I used to play like Mortal Kombat on my Super NES, but...
Who'd you play as?
I always played as... I can't even remember the yellow ninja.
Oh, Reptile?
Reptile.
Scorpion.
Guy. Scorpion. There you go. Sub-Zero Reptile? Was his like nemesis, right?
You had the genus, right, I think.
Dude, yeah. Is he the one get over here? Is that Reptile?
Get over here.
Yeah,
he had little like a serpents that came out of his wrist.
Yeah, Scorpion.
Which is sick.
Yeah. It was dope.
That was a huge game.
Oh, that was my shit.
Were you a button masher, or could you actually articulate it?
I got to a point where I could articulate it.
I never got there.
I got where I knew how to do the get over here. And then once I knew how to do that, I would just, get over here, get over here, get over here.
Yeah, you
and
just
not let
the
him
same
out.
Thing over again, dude.
Yeah.
You can make someone go crazy that way.
Oh, for sure. But then once they figure out how to also avoid it, and then you didn't get your other moves down and how to set them up with it. I never got the setup strategies really good, but... But that's kind of where it faded out for me after that.
But when you were coming up in skating, were most of your homies like older guys who were skaters? Like, were you the young buck in the crew, or did you have like a...
Yeah, I was usually the young buck, because even with kids in my own grade, I was always a year younger than everyone in my grade because for whatever reason, my birthday is the last day of the year, and it, I don't know what
it did. Yeah, you were the cutoff.
Cutoff. Yeah. So like they, instead of holding me back that year, they put me up. So I was like about a year younger than everyone already in my grade. But then on top of that, when I started going to the actual skate shop and meeting like the guys who worked there and then the other skaters who were friends with them, so I would hang out with guys like 4 or 5 years older than me and learn to skate from them. And it was really beneficial, one, because they were all way better than me and it really pushed me. And then they would also make sure I knew what videos to watch. Like, oh, you never saw Mouse video? You got to watch Costin's part in this. Or mm-hmm. you got to watch Andrew Reynolds in this video. And this. So they were like basically they were like skateboard professors and they would teach me.
Mm. Why was Costin your favorite?
Costin's my favorite because he's literally, especially in that era, just the best. He was the most innovative, the most consistent, had the most longevity, the most respect. He really innovated a lot in switch skating, rail skating, nollie skating, fakie skating, just technical skateboarding. Plus, he was really well-rounded. He would kill it at contests as well. He could skate like lots of transitions, like ramps and mini ramps and quarter pipes and stuff like that really well. He's really well-rounded. So like, and he just made it look so good and he dressed so cool. It was just...
Did you ever compete against him?
He had that thing. Yeah, I have skated contests against him.
Was that head trippy?
Early on it was, but I was really fortunate. I got to meet him. I was probably 15 when I first met him. And he came with... this photographer is really well known in skateboarding. His name is Atiba. And Atiba is known for like shooting all the famous skaters. And I was able to like get enough of a buzz to where I was linked up with Atiba and he was shooting a photo for me. And he brought Costin with him on the session because he knew Costin was my favorite skater, but he didn't tell me. And I almost froze up. Like yeah. I couldn't talk. But eventually that happened more and more. And so I got to know him more before I ever got to the point where I skated against him. So by that time it was a trip, but like I had already kind of had a relationship with him before that. So it wasn't like I just got thrown in the fire against those guys like out of nowhere, like just some kid who came out of nowhere. Because that happens a lot now, especially because a lot of kids who get discovered, say, you know, kid grew up in Wyoming and all of a sudden he gets an opportunity to come to LA and he gets thrown right in the mix. Like I was lucky, at least I was born right here. Mm. And I was able to rub shoulders with guys in the industry like gradually and kind of work into a comfort level. But I imagine how scary it'd be for some guys, especially if you come from another country or don't even speak the language and all of a sudden you're just here with everybody you saw. I would have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Is there a country that's like coming on the scene right now that was like previously not a skateboard country?
Japan in the last 5 to 7 years has really become like really dominant. They're pumping out phenomenal skateboarders left and right. I don't know what's going on over there. They have something seriously going on over there. And before that, and it's still happening now, it was Brazil. Mm. Brazilian skaters were just...
Brazilians are good at everything.
Yeah.
They rip phenomenal. At everything. Phenomenal. Volleyball, surfing, MMA.
Football, MMA,
soccer,
yeah.
Dancing.
Yeah, they're
bathing
hungry.
Bathing suits.
Oh, yeah.
Best.
Yeah.
Best.
Yeah.
Wait, so
food.
Are they allowed to street skate in Japan?
I mean, it's probably the same as here. It's probably you're not allowed, but you do it, you know?
I feel like they have this collectivist culture where, like, if they were skating, they'd be like, hey, that's not good for the entire hive. Why don't you...
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I've been there once or twice, actually. But the last time I was there, I was 19 years old. It was so long ago. I would just assume it's similar.
Yeah.
It's all good. We all don't know stuff sometimes. But I'm not sure, though, to be honest with you.
I think it's awesome.
Do you party?
I party.
You party?
I do party.
How do you party?
Usually just with some drinks. You know, I'm not much of a drug guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been slowing down on that kick. I just smoke a little weed once a week now.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, that I used to do that when I was much younger, but I couldn't handle it any longer. I started getting paranoid and anxiety.
I have that too.
I just like to have some drinks and get loose.
You did some boomers on Saturday.
Yeah, we're in Palm Springs.
Our buddy Strider's bachelor party was so fun.
Oh, Strider,
yeah.
I fucks with Strider. Dude.
Yeah,
man.
Dude, I was in a jacuzzi on boomers. It's fun.
Every morning after you wake up from boomers, you look like Doc Brown was in a dust storm. Like, your hair is always like up, and I'm like, it looks like you were in like a wind tunnel. And you just walk in with this fried look, and you'd be like, what up? Yeah. Like, this guy went on an adventure.
Dude. It was cool. We were with the Bertolina, and
the guy who runs this place.
Nice. Yeah, a jacuzzi. He looked like an alien. It was awesome. I was like, he was talking. I was like, make conversation. I'm like, wait, stop. You're an alien right now. He's like, what?
I loved it.
Sorry.
No, you go, baby.
Was there like a lot of temptations when you were coming up to, was that something you had to kind of fight off?
No, lucky for me. I literally just loved what I was doing so much. And like, I did it as like, it was like, it felt super important to me. It felt like it was a mission.
Yeah.
And I was like on a mission to be the best I could possibly be and wanted to always be considered one of the best.
So like a samurai.
But so I didn't start becoming a pile until more recent years.
you've allowed yourself to like kind of have.
Yeah. I go through these phases. Like I'll go through these phases where I'm like, no, I still got so much more to prove. I got so much more to do. I still got it. I gotta get everything out of my system. And then I'll go through a phase where I'm like, well, I've kind of done everything I've intended on doing and more. And I feel grateful about the legacy I've been able to put in skateboarding. I've earned the right to kick back a little bit, right. You know? So I'll go back and forth, depending on how my body's feeling. You know?
And it's probably tough to say by yourself, but what do you feel are like your contributions to like the skating legacy?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm just, from my perspective, I just took what all the guys I grew up watching skating, I just took what they had brought to the game and took the baton and kept running with that to evolve it a little further to where now the guys who came after me are doing that. So I just felt like, I feel like my contribution was just in my era to continue that progress of it. So it's hard for me to say. I guess a lot of people give me credit for skating Switch, but it's not like I invented that. It's not like I created that. I just saw that other guys were doing it. And I just was like, wow, I think that's really cool to be able to skate your opposite stance just as well as your regular stance. And I kind of was attracted to that and really crafted it to make it my thing and help
push
it to this generation.
Which must have opened up like just a multitude like of moves that a single rider could perform.
Oh yeah, it doubles it up, really. Mm. And, you know, especially when I was coming up to now, it was like, well, if I couldn't learn this really hard flip trick into grind or slide, I could learn the basic version of it, switch stance, and people would think of it just as crazy. So I'm like, oh, okay, so I can learn, if I can't learn how to flip into a backside tail, I can at least just learn how to do a switch backside tail, and people will lose their minds, and they'll think that's just as impressive as if I could flip into it or flip out of it. So like that was kind of my hack, my
Your
loophole.
Cheat code for
I was like, I'll just learn the simple version, but switch.
I forget who the director was. It might've been like Jean-Luc Godard, but he says you let your limitations become your style.
Mm.
Because it's like you can only do so many moves, but then at a certain point that seems more like a choice than like something that was like a reluctant decision.
Right. I mean, you take the tools you're given and you use them to the best of your advantage. Like, you know, I wasn't the biggest kid. I wasn't the strongest kid. I couldn't jump the highest or anything. So I was like, all right, well, at least if I could figure out how to rewire my brain to work opposite stance, that might be my avenue to go, you know, because I'm not going to out jump this guy, or I'm not going to, like, some guys have, you know, we were talking about earlier, just huge balls and they're willing to try any death defying thing. Well, I'm not going to out death defy that guy. So you have to find your kind of zone and craft it while also expanding in other areas, but like, you know, craft that thing.
Are you any more interested in like the business side of things? Because you have your own Primitive.
Yep, I got my own skate brand. We make skateboards, apparels, skateboarding apparel. And it's really difficult in this industry
because there's so much competition.
Not necessarily so the competition. It's more so, you know, skateboard culture is really, you know, a passionate culture. So it's hard sometimes to make healthy business decisions that don't conflict with, like, your philosophical
right.
decisions in yeah. skateboarding. You know what I mean? Like, okay, if we do this, are we going to get shit from the community because it's not keeping it real? But if we keep it real, we're going to go out of business. So it's like, it's a really fine line.
Because you got to appeal to, like, a more, like, casual person who might not know the diehard,
yeah.
like, values of skating, but they'll buy stuff so the company's profitable.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. More or less. And
that's
tough. There's tough, or there's things like,
bro, just go for it. Don't worry about the skaters, dude.
Hey, man, we're here
happy.
To protect the borders,
they're
man.
Never happy, man. No, I just mean, but Chad, this is like a small comparison, but we hosted like a clip show for the World Surf League, and I don't surf. I don't really skate. I grew up at the beach, but that's it. And then we were doing the clip show, and Chad was like, surfers are going to roast us for this. And I was like, why? Why would they be upset? And then every comment was like, these are the corniest motherfuckers
I've sure ever enough. Seen.
And I was like, dude, like, they're very protective
yeah.
over their world.
Yeah, yeah, over their craft. And rightfully so. You know, me being on both sides of it, you know, I feel that tug of war going on inside. So it's a fine balance, really hard.
Yeah, because you have the 16-year-old in you who, when you would see like that mass brand trying to sell
like,
something skateboarding,
yeah.
you were like, come on, dude, I can call
yeah.
that out in a second.
But now being on the other side of it, I understand why certain moves were made, because it's like, if you don't do certain things, and you're not going to make it to next week,
right?
You know,
mm-hmm.
as far as being a brand. So yes, I'm interested in business, but I probably won't do any more businesses in skateboarding.
Right.
I'll probably, this will be my business that I have, and it's already hard enough, but I'm going to probably go more, not even businesses, but just investment wise, like do like try and real estate and, you know, a certain level of stock portfolio and that type of stuff, where it's just cut and drive, make good, healthy choices financially, and it over time should do well or whatever. But I don't think I'm cut out or have the heart to like keep making more brands and skateboarding and stuff like that, because like it takes a toll on you, man. It's hard. It's literally a business of passion.
Yeah. And you're still with Nike.
Yeah,
right? How many still shoes Nike. Do you have now?
I got 10 signature shoes now.
With
wow.
Nike.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And
I'm stoked.
You're
yeah.
one of four people to do that, is that right?
I don't know the exact number, but I think it's more than that. I want to say it's like 7 or 8, but I'm the only right. non-basketball player to have that.
Yeah,
many
that's cool.
shoes.
Wow,
I had some of your honor. shoes.
You did?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow,
I had some 2010, I think. I had some.
Nice.
Yeah
dude, that's incredible. Did you
Thank
meet
you.
Phil Knight?
I haven't had a chance to meet Phil Knight. I met Mark Parker, hung out with him a bunch of times. He was the CEO for many years. I think I could be tripping. I want to say he's like CEO of like Disney now or something. He was some other big major corporation
right, yeah.
now. Sandy Bodecker was another high up. He recently passed away a few years ago, but he was the guy that originally signed me, and he's the guy responsible for the success of Nike SB. And before he put Nike SB together, he was responsible for taking the Nike soccer program and building it up to what it is now. So he was like a big dog over there. So I got a chance to meet some of those guys.
Are you That's excited great. To see Air?
Yes, we were just talking about it on the way here in the
that
car.
That movie's going to rip, dude.
Yeah.
It's getting good reviews.
Yeah.
I'm
is
so
it?
pumped.
That's
oh,
awesome.
It's going to be good. It's going to
yeah.
be really good. I'm
like,
looking forward to
and
it.
And did Matt Damon and Ben Affleck together?
Yeah. I mean,
they're
dude,
just,
they're the
miss.
The
they're
young Al Pacino and De Niro, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
sometimes there's those certain combos you gotta always see together.
Yeah.
And I'm always rooting for Ben Affleck. I love the way he's lived his life. Like, he just goes up. He's just a phoenix. He's always going up, crashing, coming back. People doubt him. You know, they make memes of him, like, smoking cigs and drinking Dunkin' Donuts. And I think he just, he eats all that negative attention and he lets it fuel him.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Eminem's like that, too. He has his best albums after he's coming out of the most darkest places. I feel like it's like that torture artist type of situation.
I really admire it, because it's tough. It's tough to be that person.
Yeah.
You have to kind of, you got to be okay suffering.
Yeah. Suffering sucks.
But it's kind of the best, though, too.
I mean, Maybe if you're a sicko, love that shit.
I'm a sicko, bro.
I hate it. Oh, yeah. It's harsh.
So are you pretty like balanced day to day? You keep it like the frequency in your head is a smooth melodic series of waves crashing gently on the Senegal.
Generally, yes. Generally, yes. But you know, I've definitely had my moments, especially as I got older. I've had my moments of like just totally getting way thrown off and having to find your way back to that melodic, smooth vibes. But in general, yes, I think my demeanor is pretty balanced, pretty calm. I don't really get too high or too low.
That's nice.
Do you? What was I gonna say? I forget.
Here, look, I'll do the big peach.
What's up?
No.
Big Q. So border discrimination.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Where do you think it's at right now?
I think it's at a, I'm gonna say 7.
Still pretty high.
It's still pretty high, but not at its peak, because I think the Olympics really brought more attention to it and people like might see it a little more differently.
Did you compete in the Olympics?
I did not, no. That was still during the recovery of my knee, but that's just my excuse. I was already not in fighting shape for these youngsters, so I didn't even bother. But I don't know. It's pretty, maybe 7 was too high, but it's decently accepted, but still hated on. As public skating.
Do you think that's kind of necessary to make it cool and like fun, or like maybe not fun, but like exciting?
You want to have that outsider cachet.
Yeah, where like the security guard comes in, you're like, yeah, you got to watch out for him.
Nah, I mean, for me personally, no. Like I'm too old to care about that. Yeah. I personally think it's cooler if you could just skate in peace without getting interrupted and getting thrown out.
That's a good call.
But
that's what we found.
It does, you know, give you a little like edge, bad boy kind of vibe. And I was never like a bad boy per se as a kid or anything. So, you know, there has been some moments where that works in your favor.
Because the person who's the nonstop rebel, I actually don't think that's that cool, because it's like, you're still defined by the system because you're always fighting against the system.
Right.
I think the cooler person's the one who can be rebellious if they feel like it's the right moment.
Right.
But isn't also afraid to be okay with the system if the system's correct in that moment.
You're smart, man. Like, yeah, I just, when you said that, like the rebel would be nothing without the system.
Yeah. Hmm. They just like to fight against it.
Couldn't
something.
Even be a rebel. It's like the Joker and Batman. They would be nothing without
each
other.
I was thinking
about
the Joker the other day, and I was like, Joker, you're lame. Like, all you do is go like, nothing matters.
Yeah,
you know what would be cooler, Joker, if you thought a couple things did matter. Then you'd be, and then you could still have that badass wild man in you, but you'd be fighting for something at least.
Yeah, like the line how he says, like, I'm like a dog chasing a car. I wouldn't know what to do if I caught it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, all right, so there's...
I don't think I'd be afraid of the Joker because of that. I'd be like, you don't stand for anything. I'd be like, you don't have, like, a family. You don't have a belief.
Well, guys with nothing to lose, in my opinion, could be the scariest.
But I think someone with something to lose might be even scarier.
Yeah,
like something worth dying for.
Something to protect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Philosophy. Yeah. Yeah, I like this.
Border discrimination.
Yeah. Oh, border discrimination.
Yeah.
So when you say it's a 7, what is that? So when you're thinking of the 7, it sounds like you're talking about relative to other sports acceptance.
I'm not talking about like as public acceptance. I guess I'm talking about like the kick out factor. Like when I go street skating, like, you know, you might be trying something really incredible, but the security guard doesn't care who it is, or the business owner, or whoever it may be, the janitor throwing you out at the school or whatever. And also, a lot of buildings now get built in a way that they're already become skate-proofed in the blueprints. You know what I mean?
So it's
like,
worst.
So is there an architect we could like be mad at?
I'm sure there is. I'm not familiar.
There's
with
a
who
dude
is.
Who knows how to build these things they're all going to.
They put like the things in the rails now, right?
Skate where stoppers, knobs.
Those are skate stoppers? Damn, dude.
You know what's messed up is early on in the internet days when it was starting or whatever, it was actually a former skater who invented skatestopper.com, and he made and patented these little knobs that people come by for their businesses or the houses or whatever and actually put on the ledges to stop you from skating.
Dude, he went state's evidence.
Yeah.
Turncoat. Snitch.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, so that was sad.
Betrayed
that was foul.
By our own.
Yeah, he That's probably made a killing down, off that. Yeah.
That's how it goes. He's a billionaire now.
Yeah. Yeah, but he can't look himself in the mirror.
No, dude.
Can't do it.
He's got that big glass mirror in his huge mansion. Can't even look at himself.
Soulless.
He's taking a shit. That
fat his reflection doesn't even show up.
How'd you get so rich? I stopped skating.
And literally, I stopped skating, yeah, and then I stopped skating.
Yeah, yeah. In many ways.
Yeah, that's sad.
It's not cool. Well, this is more good city council fodder.
Yes,
we could
I love your guys' work as city council. You guys are my favorite activists.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah,
dude.
Who's your second favorite?
My second favorite activist?
MLK.
He's up there. He's pretty dope. I would say Muhammad Ali.
Ali's the best, nice. Bro. Have you seen the doc When We Were Kings?
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Muhammad Ali is seriously. He's one of three people that when they passed. He's one of three people that I never met that I cried when they passed.
Right. Ali, Kobe, and John Wayne. I couldn't think of a third.
And Robin Williams.
Oh, wow. Did you ever meet him?
I did when I was real young.
Wow.
Real young. My dad used to do this thing called Comic Relief every year. And it was like a big thing. Billy Crystal, Whoopi Goldberg, Robin Williams. I remember he took me when I was real little. And I got to meet all of them backstage stuff. Yeah, so I definitely cried on all three of those when they passed.
Yeah, Robin Williams was phenomenal. So talented.
Yeah, so.
Interesting guy, too. The Ali thing, too, it's like, the movie with Will Smith, and I like Will Smith a lot.
My dad actually is in that movie. It's a funny story.
Really?
He's in that movie, and he was so excited when he got in that movie. He got the role of this guy named Dr. Ferdy Pacheco, who was Muhammad Ali's doctor, and the guy in real life, the real Ferdy Pacheco, ended up getting into a fight with the director or Will Smith or both of them or something, and they got so pissed at him that they cut as much of him out of the movie as they could.
Really?
Now you'll just see my dad in certain scenes. You'll see, if you look, he's in the corner in certain fights, and all his life, everything pretty much was cut out, and he was devastated about that.
Oh, that sucks.
But anyway, sorry to interrupt. That just
no, that was a great
jogged my
anecdote,
my
dude. The real life dude
jammed my dad up.
I know.
Jammed him.
I was going to say, I love Will Smith. I mean, we've talked about him a lot because
he's Will Smith.
He slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars, which was wild. Which I didn't think, yeah. But when I watch it, I'm like, we have so much footage of Ali that I'm like, dude, no one could play Ali. Like, no one could live up to the charisma and the purpose and the meaning that he gave to every time he spoke and when he fought and stuff like that. He's just, I'm deeply admiring of him too. I just think he's such a unique
beyond
human being.
The athlete. I love boxing. I'm a huge boxing fan.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even his boxing to me is something that I rarely even pay attention to.
It's just the out of the ring stuff.
Yeah, dude. Especially in those times, the actual danger he was facing, the actual hatred he received, the courage and heart to stand up for his beliefs, for his people, and to deny going to the war and having his career put on hold.
When he was not 28, knowing, his prime.
Heat of his prime. Not knowing if he was ever going to get back in the ring. Didn't have no way to make money between in those years. Not knowing if he was ever going to make money again. Just the stress and all that. And still be able to perform athletically at a high level. And just the charisma, of course, his amazing poems and his amazing charisma in his interviews and stuff like that. But just the real trueness of standing for what he stood for in that era, man, that takes a different kind of person, man.
Yeah, he's a hero.
Yeah, legend.
The best.
For sure.
Should we answer some questions?
Yeah.
What's up, guys? I'm interrupting this podcast so you know once again that we are on tour. We are in Sacramento tonight, San Francisco tomorrow, Portland on Friday, two shows. We got Arlington, Virginia coming up, Austin, Texas coming up. We got Cleveland, a bunch of Ohio dates. We got a lot of shit. ChannishAT.com to get your tickets. Check out the Reddit as well if you want to get some discussion going.
Yeah, talk on the Reddit because I read it nonstop. Yeah, so when there's not activity on there, bummed, bro.
Makes us feel sad.
Yeah, even if it's negative, it's still exciting.
Don't say it, dude.
No, but keep it positive. Say you like me.
We're also brought to you by Legends at Kiva Confections. Guys, it's time to talk about edibles. JT, you love your edibles, right?
I took one when you did the first ad, and I've been on one for the entire podcast. And I got to say, I feel state of the art. I'm ready for anything.
And Lost Farm makes strain-specific edibles infused with the champagne of concentrates, 100% live resin and live rosin, which is why you're so baked right now.
Absolutely.
And they're delicious, full-spectrum, and plant-based. Need I say more?
It's incredible. For weed to be plant-based?
You hit the Cherry OG Kush one, right?
Dude, that shit is fire, dude.
Yeah, and you're just having a blast.
That got me lifted. I was listening to Fleetwood Mac, and I could hear every noodle of the guitar.
So Californians, you can get 30% off your first order delivered straight to your door. Go to kivaconfections.com/go deep and use code go deep. That's right. If you live in the state of California, you can get 30% off your first order. Go to Kiva Confections. KivaConfections.com/go deep and use code go deep. You won't regret it.
Clap.
Back to the show.
You got to be pumped that skating's like the ones, like one of the jobs that artificial intelligence can't displace.
Oh, that's huge.
Oh, good call.
Like, yeah, you never watch a robot skate.
No.
No way.
I wouldn't mind like having. Well, I think the science needs to get better, but artificial knees and ankles.
Yeah, dude, if they could return us to like our 20-year-old like elasticity and like recovery,
that'd be great.
I'm doing it.
Dude, if all skaters got like transported back to their prime, like
their prime bodies.
Yeah. Wow, that'd be crazy.
Any athlete in general. Wild.
But you got all your
Jordan
experience.
Will make a return.
Yeah, dude, he'll chew everybody up. That Michael crazy Jordan fuck, dude. he'll have a lot of that built up pissed off.
That'd be fun.
Brady will unretire again, you know?
Yeah,
they'll just play till they're 3,000 years old.
Why not? Imagine how good you'll get.
All right, this one's called Kimchi Erection.
Interesting.
Hey, guys. Sid Bulbeck from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. I was listening to the podcast yesterday, and I heard that Chad said if you wanted to become fertile that you had to make sunny side up eggs, throw some kimchi on there.
It's true.
And you had to cook it in ghee butter and eat a bunch of bacon. Now I did that, and I feel great. No, Mom, I'm on the phone with the doctors. All right. Anyways, I made that because I wanted a good breakfast. I felt great, and then later on that night, I got this massive erection, and it hasn't gone away, so I don't really know what to do, and I'm scared, so whatever you can do to offer to help me. And if this has happened to you, I would be much appreciated if you could let me know. Thank you. Bye.
Dude, I don't think he has a boner.
No?
No.
You think he's making it up?
I think he made it up, dude.
I don't know. Your boner judgment's been off on this show. You know, you thought I had one and I didn't.
You're right, dude.
You know?
All right, I'll take it seriously. Good call.
We are talking.
Dude, I appreciate you, dog.
Dude, we are talking ghee butter here.
All right, fair enough. Sorry.
What is ghee butter?
I've been a butthead.
It's a type of butter. What kind of butter is it? It's a type of butter that has.
From geese.
Yeah, it's from geese, and it has the burning point is non-existent because geese don't burn.
Yeah, you can't light a geese on fire.
Yeah. Have you ever tried?
Trust me.
I can't say that I've tried, nor am I interested in finding out.
You can't go try it.
You can shoot a geese out of a potato gun, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they don't fly like you think they would.
Interesting. Maybe it's because the velocity is too fast that their feathers go off before they can expand their wings or something?
Exactly.
Ah.
Huge.
Interesting.
Good, like, intrinsic understanding of aerodynamics.
Appreciate it.
All right, dude, if you got a wood and it won't go away even after you beat your guy, you know what, dude? You just kind of suffer. You put two pairs of jeans on top of each other, you stick it upwards, strap it down with a belt, and you go to your job at the factory, and you do what you're supposed to. Put food on the table for your mama.
Uh-huh. I agree. I mean, you know, that's probably a better problem to have than the opposite problems.
So, yeah. If you're impotent.
Yeah, man. I mean, just be happy you're on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, dude.
So you're saying be proud about it.
Rock on.
Yeah, dude, rock on. Yeah.
Enjoy what you have, dude. This is
take some photos.
It's one of those good problems.
Journal on it. Yeah. Journal on what it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Write about it.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Paint with it.
Mm.
Dude, huge. Hang your towels.
Dip your hard cock into some ink or onto a, you know, some colored paint, and then put that on a canvas and draw something completely unique and keep practicing, treat it like a job, get good at it, and open a gallery.
Maybe make a mold of it.
Yeah, make a mold of your dong and then give it to an ex. Say, you'll never have to miss me again, baby.
What we're trying to say is take advantage of this moment, assuming he still has one.
Yeah, there's plenty of people out there who can't say that that's happening to them. So
that's so true, dude. What do you think? Why is there a boner crisis in America right now? A lot of people say it's pornography.
Oh, I'd say that's the case. It's like you have this overinflated, no pun intended, overinflated idea of what sex is supposed to be like, and then when you actually have like normal people sex and you're like,
you don't move
this is
much.
Not what I fantasized about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel myself boning a while ago, long time ago, and like my range of motion was basically nil.
Oh wow.
And when you watch a porn star, they're like, it's a, you know, their hip range is a couple feet.
Well,
mine's like 2 inches. But I don't think that means it's bad sex, not to be defensive. It's fire. It's fire.
Right.
It's fire. I hear you. You know, it is.
But Rubin's racing.
Wait, one more time, sorry?
Rubin's racing.
I'm not familiar.
It's a quote from the movie Days of Thunder, where Cole Trickle is rubbing his car up against
racing.
Rusty Wallace's, I think.
Okay.
But I mean it like...
Well, no, dude, you guys are still here representing for the small dong movement. So
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, little dudes,
Chad,
dude.
you can't claim to be part of it now.
Oh, shit, dude.
Put under my dog, dude. Even if he's got a Mandingo piece, that's still my brother, dude.
No.
We need allies.
I felt your pain there.
Thank you.
Like, I felt how you know, you wanted to represent for the cause so hard, but how devastated you were when you found out you weren't part of the club, man.
Yeah, I was wondering why I had to tape it up.
Yeah. I was feeling for you on that one.
Thanks, dude.
Have girl skaters come a long way?
Yeah, they're killing it. They're like just as big or bigger than a lot of the guy skaters now. There's a young girl from Brazil, actually. Her name is Raíssa Leal. She's a little girl from I forget what city she's from in Brazil, but
Curitiba.
I'm not sure.
Probably not.
But she actually became viral. She was a little girl. She was probably like 7 at the time, and she went out skating, and she was wearing a fairy suit, little like blue fairy suit with wings, and she heel flipped a four-stair, and it went crazy viral.
Right.
But she actually ended up continuing skating, and now she's like, she got silver at the Olympics. She's like the biggest name in female skating right now, won all the contests last year. I think she's only 14 now.
Wow.
And she's just on top of the world.
And you have a daughter, right?
I do.
Is she skating?
No. She'll roll around here and there. She's not really, she hasn't found her thing yet. I'm kind of like open to letting her explore and find what her thing is and try not to push her into anything.
That's good. Yeah.
But allow it to happen.
Yeah, because that must have been good too. I do feel like if you push a kid into something, it feels like a job. Whereas if they choose it, they'll always have passion for it because it was their choice.
Exactly. And I've seen it happen the opposite way, and you know, but yeah, I guess that's not my philosophy. It's like, I want her just to be happy. I hope she finds something, a passion that she like falls deeply in love with, that's constructive and healthy and whatever, even if it's not something that you can make a huge career out of or whatever. Just like, I just personally, being fortunate enough to have live my passion for my living, like it just feels like it makes life so much more fulfilling, you know, every day.
And she's part of a, your dad is a great comic, you're an incredible skateboarder. It's like, who knows, dude?
Yeah, and you know, I just was fortunate enough, I guess, I suppose it had to happen that way for me to make it in skateboarding. Was like, I had to find it young, you know, like most people don't find their stuff until they're fully adults, fully grown.
Well, you started when you were like 11, right?
11,
that even seems kind of late.
For that time, it wasn't. For now, yeah. Now you see kids, like, but they also, like, a lot of these kids have their parents putting them in it early because their parents came from a generation where that's what they did.
Yeah.
So, like, naturally, they're going to introduce their kid to it, you know, instead of, like, in my generation, it was, like, whatever, baseball, football, basketball is what you got introduced to when you're younger.
Yeah, because there's, like, skate coaches now.
There are. Yeah, full-on coaches. Yeah. So, it's really getting big.
Hmm. I want to be a skate coach.
You'd be killer.
You think so?
Like, just your philosophy would, you know,
skate, I would
mental
hammer that.
Skate coach. Yeah,
I'd be like, not how do you skate, why do you skate?
That's right.
They'd be like, because it's fun. I'm like, define fun.
Yeah.
Purpose or no purpose? And then the kid would be like, what? And I'd be like, well, think about it. Fucking think about that.
All right, break up ultimatum.
Oh, here we go.
Uh-oh.
What is up, legends? I have a question for you, and this is for the esteemed guests as well. So I have been dating this wonderful girl for the past 6 months or so. She's in the Coast Guard, stationed here on the East Coast in Boston, and she has been relocated to Charleston.
Great time. Never
and
been.
And my question for you is,
really
basically
go.
I've been given an ultimatum. Either I go with her down to Charleston, where I've never been before, or we break up. And I know that if I don't go, I'll regret it. But I also am having a bad taste in my mouth with the ultimatum.
Yeah.
And it's sort of making me think, like, longer term when it comes to where we want to raise a family, the different types of schools, you know, our future kids will go to, you know, things like that, that an ultimatum will kind of be her method of getting her way. And so I guess I'm just curious on the Stokers and esteemed guests' thoughts. I love you guys. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to hearing your advice.
Dude, I zoned out there. So the ultimatum.
This guy's got his head on straight. Yeah, I like this guy.
So I hear him. She's going to break up with him unless he goes down.
So she's getting relocated from Boston to Charleston. They've been together for a while. He's in love with her. He wants to be with her. But she was like, if you don't move to Charleston, we're done. And he wants to move with her, but he doesn't like the tactics she's employing to get him to go.
Yeah, it's not cool.
But I will say this. What movie took place in Charleston? I think the first
Notebook.
Movie. The Notebook, dude.
I just started watching this for the first time three nights ago.
It's a great flick.
But I started watching it late at night, so I only made about 15, 20 minutes.
Brother, take your time, man. Yeah. No rush. It'll be there.
But that was a badass move when he was hanging off the Ferris wheel.
Oh, yeah, one arm, dude.
Oh, dude, I wish I could be that kind of guy. Dude.
You are that kind of guy.
No, not like that, man. That's some real shit.
You would have fucking skated down the entire thing, dude, and like ollied into her cart.
Dude, I would have been too afraid to talk to her.
She's a smoke, dude. Yeah. Rachel McAdams.
You could stall the gondola until it goes all the way down.
No, I could, but I wouldn't have, man. I always admire those type of dudes.
Romantics.
Yeah, they see what they want, and they went after it, man. God bless them.
I'm telling this dude, what would Noah do? Noah would go, and he would call her a pain in the ass and say, hey, lady, I get it that you're a boss bitch, but I don't appreciate being talked to like that. I don't like that it's always got to be your way or the highway. All that being said, I am moving. I love you to death. Let's make this happen.
Right.
I fuck with that. And then once you get there, maybe he needs to, just not let it become a habit, you know?
She's going to be tough. It's going to be a constant tension with her because she likes to be in charge.
But it already kind of sounds like maybe he kind of isn't wearing the pants in the situation.
I think he's got to be like, look, don't have to do this. I'm doing this just because I want to.
Yeah.
But she's only going to know that he moved. So in her head, she's like, well, what I won.
Yeah.
I won. I guess.
Well, then maybe you should play it
for
a little bit, being like, I'm not taking, like, the ultimate. I was going to do it, but not the ultimatum. And just give her like 5 days of like.
What's the commute time between, what do you say, Boston and Charleston?
That's like, I'm going to say that's like a 2 hour flight and like a 12 hour drive.
You know, maybe he goes down there a week or two at a time. He fills it out back and forth, and you know.
Because it's tough because he wants to go, but he doesn't want to give her her way because of the way she went about trying to get it.
No, I feel that. I feel that. But at the same time, when you love someone, like you really love them, you feel good about them getting their way to a degree. I get when it becomes a problem, when it's like, now you're taking advantage. But like, you know, don't you want to give your woman what she wants?
Mm. Let her win. Mm. That's a tough lesson to learn. Let her win. You know, because we're hardwired to be competitors, to get out there and get the W. But you guys are on the same team. But you don't want, but you know what it is too? It's like the way Steve Kerr talks about it. He's like, you played with Tim Duncan, still win titles. You played for Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, look, you can be the star of this team, but be more like Tim Duncan and let's be teammates. Don't be like Michael Jordan and be like a dictator.
Let me be Dirk.
Let me be Dirk. Yeah. 7-footer, nice blonde hair, fadeaway jump shot, unblockable. Do you know what that means in dating terms? You do.
I suppose. I kind of blanked out right there.
Dude, I did too. The whole question,
I blanked out as well.
But you went into flow state.
Someone had to talk.
You were on flow state right there. I was a little...
We got to give this guy something concrete though. I think he's
got to move down, but he's got to let her know that he knows.
Listen,
like this ultimatum shit, not good.
Tell her, look, I'm doing this because I want to, not because you're making me. But now my antennas are up, and I'm going to be more sensitive to you telling me to do things because you were over the top in your demand here. Yeah. So if you want us to have a productive, good relationship. I can't feel, look, you're in the Coast Guard. I'm not, I can't feel like I'm taking orders here, all right? I'm not on your cutter boat, dude.
I think give her an ultimatum in return and be like, you have to do this or else I'm gonna break up with you.
What would this be?
Fucking.
Like, I hear you.
I feel like that opportunity will present itself at some point.
Yeah.
You know, where he needs to man up. Yeah, it's tough, man. I feel like she could have just avoided the whole thing by asking differently. She could have just said, I want you.
She could have just said, I really want you to come.
I want you to come with me, and I'm afraid that, you know, our relationship might not work out as smooth, or might, you know, run into some problems and tension if we're, you know, so far apart. You know, would you consider moving with me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But just to throw a straight ultimatum, I feel like that tells me she's already, this isn't the first time she's
unnecessarily drop the hammer
the law down.
He could be like, he could talk in Coast Guard terms. He could be like, look, I get that you want to be the captain, but I'm the gunner's mate. Like, I'll fucking shoot, you know.
You need me on your boat. You want me on your boat.
I'm your protection. So
is it tough dating as a skater?
I think it's just tough dating as a man.
It is tough, right?
Or as a boy man.
We all are boy men.
Yeah.
I learn that every day.
Yeah.
I'm humbled by it.
Yeah, it's tough, for sure. I was in a couple long-ass relationships, and when I got out of them, the last long one, and I came into this world of dating, and it was like my first time dating as an adult.
Hmm.
And, it took me a little bit to figure things out. I don't think I have him figured out, but it took me a while to adjust to the new.
What do you mean?
Just like, I didn't even know how to approach a woman or talk to a woman, or my long-term relationship that I was in, we broke up in 2000 2020 during the pandemic. And when I first got with her, it wasn't like Instagram was around, but it wasn't like
the norm.
The way I was meeting anybody, like I just, any girl that I had met by happenstance at a function or something. So I just started going out there and just sending heart out emojis as soon as I was like, I didn't know what to do.
It's not the worst course of action.
No, surprisingly, it worked well. But then it was like back to that the Joker line, like when I was chasing a car, I wouldn't know what to do if I caught one. Like, I just was throwing it out there. Someone, I didn't know what to do when, if they actually responded. Like, oh shit! Like,
it's real.
Yeah. Hi, and I would just like be frozen. So it took me a minute to finally like learn how to like, okay, just hold a conversation and
I'm always. Out. I don't think anyone knows There's a couple guys who are like professional dick dealers who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, a small percentage of the pop. But even like whenever like when you see like Adam Levine's text messages get released, you're like, this guy looks like an idiot in the way he's DMing these girls. And it's like, he has tons of women who like him. It doesn't seem like he'd be challenging. I just don't think any guy looks cool when they're chasing it. But you gotta put feelers out there.
Right. But then again, no girl is gonna respect a man who's not gonna chase it.
No, you gotta put it out there.
Yeah. So yeah, who knows what's
going on. Sounded cooler when I was like, you know, when I was dating and I was trying to like get on a date with a girl. But there is a point where you just have to be like, do you wanna go out with me?
Yeah. It's you gotta face that. I haven't gotten comfortable with it, but I'll let you know if I ever get to that point of feeling real smooth. I don't know. I'm still, my tactics are pretty juvenile.
I think it's probably better than, I think you're probably being hard on yourself.
Maybe, I don't know. it's not that great, to be honest, but somehow I get by.
I have like text messages that I sent like from like 3 years ago that I'll just randomly remember while I'm driving, and I'll just smack my forehead and be like, you bitch.
Yeah, I'm constantly having an embarrassing moment pop up in my mind at any given moment, and I'll respond out loud even when I'm by myself, like, oh my God. And it'll just, it happens to me a few times a day at least.
It's a vulnerable thing.
Dude, yeah, I've had some
But
moments.
You know what? It's the man in the arena who counts.
That's right.
It's the guy who's out there taking swings.
That's right.
You gotta do it. That's where the bravery is. The Joker wouldn't do that. He's too afraid of rejection.
I don't know if I agree with that.
You think he's chasing it?
I think he's chasing it and not knowing what the hell he's gonna do when he catches it.
Right.
I don't think he cares either way.
Yeah, I don't know what the Joker's like with chicks.
Probably better than me.
No way. You're a handsome guy.
You see, but that doesn't work. Like, it only takes you so far.
What does it mean to work? Like, that you bat 1,000 and that no one ever says no?
No, it's just like, okay, like...
Yeah, that was
intense. I've said, like, I've had, you know, interesting times in the dating world. And oh, no, but you're a handsome guy or a successful guy. And you're like, yeah, but like... Then I have to talk at some point, and that's where it really goes downhill.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, have you ever seen a really gorgeous, wonderful woman, and you're hanging out with her, and she becomes less and less gorgeous and wonderful the more she talks?
Sure.
Or doesn't talk? Mm-hmm. Like, I think
the reality of her versus the image of her.
I think charisma far outweighs looks or status.
Mm. I agree. Like someone who's a real substantial person, like a real fucking person, like knows who they are, knows how they feel about things, knows how to process things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sexy.
Yeah, and like what you said, knows how to process things. Like I equate it back to, like, if I'm talking to a girl I'm interested in, I equate it back to what we were talking to before. We were talking about like the skate contest, and I was telling you how like early on my brain and my body wouldn't function together because, you know, I'd get all nervous and I'd short circuit. It happens the same as like, I'll know what I feel about on a certain subject, or I'll know where I stand on it. But in the moment I'll get asked and my brain will go blank and I'll just blurt something random out and I'll just, damn it. And then, you know, I'll walk away from the situation feeling like, oh my gosh, I should have said this, or why did I say that, or this and that. And I just put my foot in my mouth, and
I think you're being hard on yourself, man.
Yeah, I think you're a charismatic guy.
Thank you, guys.
I think you got a nice voice, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
You do.
Easy
to
talk to. I think we put...
You guys are building me up, man.
When you're single, I did this too. I put a lot of pressure on myself to like be a certain guy that I thought would be good at being single. And it does work, but it's like we have this like version of ourselves that we think we have to be effective in the dating world.
That was another confusing thing, is like... After coming out of a super long relationship, I was not trying to get into another relationship. I was like, I had been through 2 7-year relationships almost back to back. So from 19 to 35, I was pretty much in a relationship. So I hadn't been single since I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 35, I'm supposed to be a grown adult man, and I'm out here clueless, And then I'm thinking like, well, last thing I want to do is first girl I go on a date with, now I'm right back into a relationship. Like I need to feel out the scene and see what I'm into, what I like, what I don't like, or whatever. And I didn't know how to do that.
Like how to communicate that to someone.
Yeah, so like I would tell like, hey, look, I got out of a relationship, but you know, I'm not really looking for much. You know, I'm down to hang out. I think you're cool. So like, you know, if you want to kick it, cool. If you don't, okay. And like, I would just word it. Like,
you'd over communicate.
Yeah, over communicate. Now that's my problem. Because I thought I was being a good dude because I don't want to play with anyone's feelings. I don't want to drag you along.
But then the girl's like, whoa, we went on one date and you're giving me like a whole essay on like where you're at.
Yeah, no, that's normal.
It's tough to say that. I've said that before too. I remember one time I said it. This girl, she starts laughing. She goes, ha, 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 ha. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah, but that's always the girl who's actually in love with you.
Oh, no, yeah.
And
she's
like playing it cool.
I think she was bummed.
Yeah, but then you don't say it.
Yes,
and then you're
they
a bad
get,
guy.
And then they get under the impression that something's happening.
Yeah.
And you have to then say it after a while. And they're like, so you're just wasting my time? Or and you're just like, you can't win. So, like, how do these dudes out here, like...
But they do it because they practice it, and then they become a bit calloused from it. And actually, I got, like, for whatever my realm was, I got pretty good at it, but I didn't like the person I was when I was... I didn't feel like myself.
Sure.
I think you're feeling like your authentic self is in conflict with the dating person.
Yeah,
that would be more effective at it. But I think that's a good thing.
To who though?
to your soul.
Yeah, to my soul. You're right. Like I definitely don't have this fantasy or idea that I want to be a playboy or anything like that. But at the same point, I'm like, how do people like go out there in the dating world and like play the field or
and
test out the
like
scene and not be considered
people.
A womanizer or a playboy? Just they're just a person who's out here just kind of feeling out what they like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't think they say much.
Yeah, I don't know, man. See, this is.
I think it's cool though. I think it's way cooler to be in that position.
Yes.
To be someone who's successful and has accomplished a lot in his field, right? And is just a nice, genuine guy, as opposed to someone who's really good at playing the dating shit. Does that make sense?
100%.
Because, but people who are really good at that. A lot of times, that's their whole life.
They're hollow, they're shallow. They're Ryan Gosling in the other movie. The opposite.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah, Crazy Stupid Love.
I used to look at those guys, you know, when I was young, I'd be like that, you know, when I was like a teen or whatever. But then you like meet those guys and you're just like, they're just off-putting where you're like.
Oh, yeah,
like,
they're hollow.
Yeah.
For sure.
And they're not as, they're typically not very, they're good at being removed. And to be good at something, you have to be the opposite of removed. You have to be immersed and passionate and vulnerable to it. And so I think being good at that comes at the expense of other things, which is what makes you well-rounded. But I do want to ask your buddy, is he being hard on himself or is he...
Oh, you got to talk to Mike. This guy will make you laugh. He's the funniest guy I know.
He's literally like, he beats himself up, not like physically, but mentally.
Yeah, he's being too hard on himself, right? And
I think that he just, like you said, he's got to look himself in the mirror and know who he is, head to toe.
Yeah.
I just feel like he doesn't... give himself the right chance and opportunity to succeed at a solid relationship. I just think he just needs soul searching.
Took a few swings and struck out heavy.
That's all right.
So I was like, I don't like this anymore.
It is LA.
It's a hard thing.
It is LA too.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that was beautiful, man.
That was great.
I think you sound like a really good friend. You really spoke to like his core.
He's the best friend.
I can tell you look out for him. That's beautiful.
He does.
Yeah, it's tough, man. And you know, I say this a lot, like, love is a full contact sport. Like, you're giving someone else permission to fuck you up, and...
You don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
How literal that is, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like skating, dude. You take a big tumble off that rail.
Yeah.
But you can get up. You can get up.
He's laughing. He knows why.
off camera. Yeah. Well, I think that was nice.
Yeah, that was really fun, dude. Thank you so much for
my
coming.
My pleasure,
out.
Dude. You were amazing. Dude, thank you so much.
You guys are amazing. I'm just hyped to be here. I'm stoked.
Oh, this is surreal for me.
I'm one of the stokers, so like, I'm out here just wanting to support my favorite activist.
Let's go, dude.
No, this is surreal for me.
That means a lot to us.
My favorite, like, what was it, a week or two weeks out of the year growing up, X Games, the summer watching that. I like,
Summer X.
Dude. I would get Taco Bell, be in the pool, watching X Games, Sal Masekela. Like, so they're like, this is really surreal.
Taco Bell in the pool. I
Taco
love
Bell,
it.
Dude.
In the pool.
Yeah, dude, you get some of those cinnamon twists. You're sponsored by Mountain Dew.
I was cool, for a while. Man. But now we represent A-Shock. Shout out A-Shock.
Yeah, one of my favorite helmets from the X Games was the all-green Mountain Dew helmet. I forget who wore it, but...
It wasn't me. That's for sure. Yeah. Wasn't me.
I'd see that.
In the street skating, they didn't make us wear helmets, thank God.
Yeah.
They only made the vert skaters wear helmets.
Yeah.
Which really... probably did not boost their stoke, but
no one was cool in a helmet.
No, no.
Don't wear helmets, kids. I think we should leave it there.
Well, I'm sending mixed signals here. This is starting to sound like my dating life here now. Yeah. I don't know what to say. I should stop going on podcasts. I should just stop talking.
No,
in
dude, you're compelled to be genuine. That means a lot to me. I feel very connected to you now.
Thank you.
That means a lot. And I think a lot of people who listen to it, it'll mean a lot to them that we're talking about this stuff.
Hey man, well, that's all part of being an activist. It's all part of helping out.
We're activating hearts, minds, and balls, dude.
Where are we at with the public yachts,
bro? That's the thing we're pushing the hardest, dude.
We're close, dude. I mean, we got Denison Yachts is on board. We just got to get actual yachts.
Nice.
And I worry so many people are going to... I've been really on this artificial intelligence kick and probably a bit too negatively obsessed with it. But I think especially if we're going into this era of like automation and job displacement, where are you displacing us? We need a place to go that makes us feel good. What's better than a boat? A bunch of big fucking boats where we can chill and ruminate on what humans' new purpose in society, the world, the universe is. And that's what Sagan said our job is, dude, to contemplate things on yachts.
I like that.
The one thing I'm hoping with AI is that it can teach us how to do things like the Matrix. So I can learn how to skate really well.
Hey.
And then we can go for a sesh.
Please.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah, but then I'd be jealous if you were better than me now.
Nah, you'd use the AI.
I was curious about the competitive nature of skaters.
I just want to be able to skate with you. I'm not trying to be
Well, you can skate with me anytime you want.
I want to like hit a rail or something.
Well,
I can't do that yet.
As long as you sign a waiver, I'll let you try at my spot. Now,
dude, we should use look, no worries if you don't want to do it. And I know we're on camera right now, so it feels like it's kind of binding. I don't want you to feel obligated at all.
Okay.
Although I am putting you on the spot.
Okay.
When we go to the city council and we ask them for marble, can you cruise?
Oh, I'll be so scared. I don't know how you guys do that.
No, dude,
I'll give you an insight. Former pro skateboarder and one of my closest friends in this whole world by the name of Mikey Taylor, really well-known pro skater, is now a councilman of Thousand Oaks.
Ooh.
City man. If you guys go to the Thousand Oaks City Council on a day when they're in there, you might have a supporter in there.
Dude.
This is huge. That's good intel.
I can't claim that I'm going to show up there with you guys, but I'm going to contribute. I mean, I can show up maybe at that one, but
I'm just saying in general,
I'm scared. You guys, the courage you guys have for that, man, dude.
Can we just say you support it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You can tell in that meeting, you can say, you know, we got the endorsement of, you know, Rodriguez and of us, you know.
I'll say, like, spokesman for 10 different Nike shoes.
Yeah.
The council will have no choice. Dude.
What up, council?
Let's go.
You know, my esteemed colleagues, you know, get a good sunning session in, perennial sunning session.
Dude, that's
something. Beforehand, get your mind right.
And we'll tell Mikey, we'll be like, Mikey, what's good, dude?
Yeah.
We know your heart is with us. Now, can you cut through the bureaucratic BS of government rule and give the people what they need?
The marble jungle.
And that works for everybody.
Yeah,
everyone loves marble.
Yeah,
and we'll mention the lime juice thing.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll still clear that.
That's it, dude.
All right,
that's it. Thank you,
I'm
man.
Glad
dude,
I thank can, you. I can leave you guys with that bit,
dude.
Of help, knowledge.
It was an absolute pleasure, man. So fun, man. Thank you, guys.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it was so fun. If you need advice, these guys. Are